In today's episode, we unpack 7 church salary and compensation tips you need to know for 2021. We have all heard of the extremes of pastors who are paid way too much or way too little. But how should pastors and church staff be compensated? Join us as we do a deep dive into some of the compensation trends we see in 2021. We hope this conversation helps you reach more people and grow. You're listening to the Reach Right podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Well, hey guys, welcome to the Reach Right podcast, episode number 32. I am your host, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host,
Ian Hyatt. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, how's it going, Ian? Good to chat with you today.
Yeah, good to chat with you. Cold day here in Austin, Texas. Yeah, very cold, un-Texas-like weather, but we're surviving. That's what I hear.
But we have a hot topic to go along with it. Not like the store hot topic, but our own hot topic.
Definitely not that.
We're talking about 7 church salary and compensation tips for 2021. When I first brought this topic idea to you, you thought it might be a little bit on the boring side, it seemed like. So, I don't know. I think that
halfway joking. I was halfway joking.
No, I get it. I think to a lot of people, it's just like if you're not involved in it. But I'll tell you this: that we've done a blog. Most of our audience knows we have a blog that's been going for years now. And our 4th most read post is our Ultimate Church Compensation and Salary Guide. That's our 4th most visited post that we have in our entire catalog there. Yeah. So there's a lot of interest around this topic, and I get it. I think that the thing about church compensation is that it's one of those things that's just kind of nobody can talk about it. And I think everybody has questions about it. We hear this from church boards and councils all the time about these kinds of questions here. And I just think it's one of those things that's it's just sticky. It's a sticky conversation to have. So we kind of put our heads together and we came up with a handful of tips and maybe even trends that we're seeing here in 2021. I think that the game has changed when it comes to how we do compensation and some of the conversations around that and just some advice that we have for people here today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is a hot topic and it's not going to be boring. It's not going to be boring to our listeners. So
I don't think so either. So that's good. Well, I'll kick it off here. I'll start with number one. The first topic, our first tip is to keep an eye on Glassdoor. Glassdoor, for those of you that don't know, is a website. Really functions almost like a social network where people can go in and give reviews and salary feedback and other feedback about the company that they work for. Think of it kind of like a Yelp for employees, basically, where you go in and give your company stars and those kinds of things. Now, you and I went in and we were looking at some of our old companies that we worked for and
Some interesting feedback.
I never put a review for any of the companies I had worked for before, but
what was humorous that? To you and I, but not so funny to someone who was seriously looking into it, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something that I think churches really need to watch out for nowadays, because I think churches are always surprised just that they get reviewed at all, right? So, so I think most churches now have at least a review on Yelp, most churches of size at least. If you're known in your community, you have reviews on Yelp. We have some posts in our blog about how to manage that and how to handle those kinds of things, because you do ministry for any length of time. You will have positive reviews and you will have negative reviews that show up on Yelp. But I would say in general, reviews about your church are good because they build search traffic, and it's kind of cool when people search for churches. A lot of times the Yelp review is one of the first few things that come up, like Yelp reviews for churches. And I know at our church that I pastored in Madison, we saw people that came, and it baffles me, but they came because they read a good review on Yelp of our church, which is, it's like it's a restaurant or some other place that you go to. But anyway, I think that this is really the same thing for your church staff. glass door is full of all kinds of feedback. Some of it really positive, some of it really negative, but getting good things to be said about your church on there is something that's really important, I would say.
Yeah.
And I took a look at a handful of the larger churches in our country, well-known ones that you'd see, and all of them have dozens of reviews from employees and past employees. The challenge is a lot of time it is past employees, and a lot of times past employees are past for a reason, and there's something they didn't see eye to eye about, and it's but I think just every church should really be aware that there is a likelihood now that when you have staff that at some point they'll put some kind of feedback about their relationship with your church into Glassdoor, and I think people need to be aware of that. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, just a little bit to add on that. I think it would also, it helps if you look into that and you see not only reviews about your own church there, perhaps, or just other churches, I think it'll help you in church leadership to gauge, you know, and it, you know, what you should be paying, because you'll, based on the positive and negative feedback, you'll be able to probably analyze the value of each maybe staff position.
Yep.
You know, when you hear how that person valued their own role at the church or someone else's role, I think it helps you gauge that. So I think that's how it'll help you kind of know, you know, what you should be paid or someone should be paid or so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think it is really helpful for people to see that kind of stuff. Now, Glassdoor is challenging in that there's it's always anonymous. And so you can take those salary reports with a grain of salt. It may or may not be accurate, and who knows.
Right.
And sometimes they'll leave benefits and those kinds of things out of their Glassdoor review.
Right.
And I think with churches, as we'll talk about in other points here, like it varies so greatly from church size to church size, from region to region, to education level, to all those kinds of things. I'd say there's more variance in church compensation than just about any other employment opportunity that's out there, especially when a lot of times people do it on a volunteer basis, or they take part of their salary, they're willing to be underpaid in order to do an act of service in a lot of ways. So a lot of those numbers are hard to make heads or tails of, but I think it is a great place to start. And I think everybody who's involved in church leadership should be aware of Glassdoor and what it says about your church.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Well, I'll tackle the second one, and this is to have a smaller but well-paid staff. I think that for the larger church, maybe there could be a struggle with this concept, but, you know, maybe I don't think there should be, because I think that what we've seen, at least some of the data I've seen, is when you have a larger staff that is not paid as much, there's more turnover that takes place. There's, you know, a revolving door often. And honestly, I think that you just got to think about a lot of factors with this, that if someone's better paid, they're going to do a better job typically. and so when you have a smaller, you know, more well-paid staff, not only are those people more bought in and will probably be there for the long term, which is healthy for your church, you know, to have a pastoral staff that is there for the long haul and people love them and get to know them, and they're not having to get to know a new pastor all the time. There's so many benefits, but you can also pay them better. Maybe one negative thought would be, well, okay, that's going to make for a lot more work on these individuals, but I don't know. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you get when you compensate people well, is they're usually, you can compensate only the best and the high performers on your church staff, and they can probably get more done with less time, and they're very efficient with their time. Anybody who's run an organization knows that that's how different people and different employees will work in different ways. I think the meat of this one here is that, just to kind of give some numbers and kind of an idea of what we're talking about. Let's say a church has a $300,000 a year staffing budget. So their total staff budget is $300,000 a year of their overall budget. In this case, the proposal would be, it'd probably be better to pay four people, my math is right, four people $75,000 a year than paying 10 people $30,000 a year.
Right.
You'd get better quality people, and they'd be willing to do a good job. There'd be less turnover. And that's really the things that kill churches, is the turnover in staff.
Yeah.
You know, we all know, we've all seen and probably been part of churches where worship leaders leave or youth pastors leave, and with them out the door go several other families because they have a specific connection to that family there. So that's the idea behind it. I have been guilty of the opposite, and I would actually see, I usually see smaller churches being more likely to do this. I think larger churches kind of get it, that they need to give decent full-time compensation to people where they can. I think smaller churches, and I know I kind of did this, is that we tried to spread out some kind of pay. You know, we didn't have that much money. We had maybe $100,000 to pay our staff with, and we had lots and lots of part-time employees. And it was understood that it was part-time, and it was actually part-time, I would say. Sometimes you see those horror stories from churches where they call the job part-time, but really they're, you know, they're working 70 hours a week in part-time work. And that's not what we're talking about with this. But I think this is something that makes sense to most church leaders, that it's important to make sure that you, it's better to have fewer people that are really content and are going to be there for the long haul than having lots of people that'll come and go, and there'll be lots of transition that way.
Yep. That's it. That's it. So nothing much to add on that. I think that was good. Well covered.
Awesome. Number three, it's remember the rule of 75. And let me give a little explanation as to what this is. You take a look at churches across the entire country. This is a United States-based survey. Tom Rainer put this information out a couple of years ago. And the average is one full-time staff person for every 75 people in attendance during your normal worship services. So not membership, but 75 people in average attendance there. And so that is just, it's not necessarily that it's the only number that it can be, or that's necessarily wrong if you're at a different number. But if you are really far outside of that, let's say you have a staff person for every 40 people in church attendance, a full-time staff person, or you have a staff person for every 200 people in attendance, you're pretty far outside of those normal ranges on things. And you might want to take a hard look at your staffing setup and how things are going there. You might be overstaffed or understaffed based on that. And I think it's helpful for pastors to know kind of what the average is for that and what other churches are seeing. And it's a nice kind of roundish number at 75 is an easy number to remember of how many people should be on our staff based on the size of our church.
Yeah, it kind of gives you a good way to measure, because it is kind of hard to figure this out, I think, for a lot of pastors and staff leaders, just to, you know, to think about what's fair and how do we distribute money here and there and whatever. And I think it is a good kind of a home base kind of a measurement. And also I think what also this helps with is not just with compensation, but it helps you kind of know how to serve your people well, right? So I think that's a good takeaway from this, is just that, you know, if you only have one person per every 150 people or something like that, you know, how well or is everyone being served and accounted for and communicated with? And so I like this rule for that reason too.
See, the challenge is, I think that there's a lot of churches that are kind of in that in-between place, right? So we know the average church in the country is something about 75 people, and they usually have an average of one full-time staff person, the lead pastor usually. But I think as churches start to grow, where it gets challenging is where you make that leap from, you know, 100 people to maybe 200 people. And at 200 people, people are starting to expect to have youth pastors and children's pastors and worship pastors. And, you know, it's kind of hard to get those numbers in check. If you have 150 people, it'd be great to have all those staff members. But a lot of times you're going to have people doing double duty and covering multiple areas, just because to have four full-time staff people at a church of 150 puts you way outside of that range. And you're probably going to be in a hard place for some of your budget conversations going forward. So that's what I think where churches run into the problem the most with this. But I think the rule of 75 is a good rule of thumb just to kind of keep tabs on that for you.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, I'll tackle the next one. And this one, it's kind of a fun one, I think, and funny a little bit. So this is where it's less boring right now. So this is, don't vote on compensation. So don't put this to a vote. And I think it's kind of funny. We've seen over the years, we've done a bit of logo design here at Reach Right. I think whenever I think of logo design, it's the most subjective thing to so many people. We've seen churches that, you know, will take logo comps to, you know, a congregational vote and good luck, or even to a committee, because, you know, a logo is something so subjective. There's artwork, there's emotion involved, just like there's emotion involved in how someone believes someone else should be paid, right? So I think that, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we were joking about it before when we were talking about this before the podcast, that, you know, if so-and-so did, you know, doesn't like the job the youth pastor's doing, well, they're not going to vote for a decent salary for that kid. So, so I think that less leadership involved on these decisions is probably the better way to go.
Man, I think that, I just don't, I don't like voting in churches in general. I think that it's, I know that's an anti-American thing to say, because we always talk about how important the right to vote is and all those things. As an American, mm-hmm. it's weird to say that, but just as a church leader, I think minimizing places where we vote is one of the best things you can do in ministry. And so I'm thankful to be a part of a denomination that has minimal voting. There's very little. I was mm-hmm. never voted on as a pastor. I was appointed by a district supervisor. And the only thing we would ever really vote on was if we were going to acquire property or not. And then we sometimes would kind of ratify new church board members or council members. But yeah, I know you have you told me a funny story about churches that vote, right? You want to tell that, recount that old tale?
I hope it's the same thing, but I was one of the church, the first church I was a part at and that I came to faith at actually had a rigorous voting, congregational voting process. And I was in on a lot of these votes. And one of the pastors there, the associate pastor who'd been serving there for a very long time, he thought he had the seat. So we were up for finding a new senior pastor. Okay. So the associate pastor thought he was a shoe-in and just had believed that for a long while. And the church did have some other candidates in there. And I was looking at the associate pastor and who I was close to, and I was excited for him. He looked excited. He was there in his suit and happy. Everyone was visiting around him. And then all of a sudden they make the announcement that they're bringing in someone new from the outside that no one ever even heard of. And they had him on screen, on two big screens. It's about a 1,200 member church. So they had a good production to it.
So like American Idol style.
It was like that. They zoom in on both of their faces. And so you see one devastated and one, overcome with joy. And, I was like, they probably shouldn't have gone about it that way. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I don't know. I certainly agree.
Was that the story?
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking of too. That's one of my favorites. Not favorites. Yeah. One of the saddest stories I've heard. Yeah. And I don't know. It should be so obvious to us in 2021, if you look at our overall landscape in our country, that voting doesn't unify people. Like having to vote, we're not more unified because we vote on things. It actually, in general, it tends to create disunity, and it takes a real great leader to bring that back together. But back to the compensation side of that, I think what happens is that there's just so many varying opinions on this. You'll have people that don't make a lot of money within your church. You'll have people, every church is going to have the whole spectrum, and you'll have people that don't make a lot, and they're going to hear, our youth pastor wants to make how much money? And then they'll kind of vote accordingly. And then they'll have other people that don't like the youth pastor or whatever, the lead pastor's agenda, or they don't like the way the worship leader doesn't sing hymns the way that they want to hear hymns. And so they'll dock him $10,000 a year for that. And it is one of the worst ways you can decide on compensation. I couldn't agree more on that. Voting in general is bad, but on compensation, it's one of the worst things a church can do a church-wide vote on.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. Nothing further to add there. I think we made our point with that one.
Well, I think this next one ties in with that. If you're not going to vote on compensation for individual people, and I think just in general, it should never be that way. How do you do that? And I think that's number five. It's you should let pastors determine their own staff's compensation. And so this is a little bit tricky and nuanced on how you would do that, because obviously the pastor can't just decide, all of the budget. But what I've seen work for churches best is that the board or the council, however you guys make those decisions, they will decide on an overall staffing budget, right? So they'll decide that, maybe X number of dollars, let's say we were using that example before, $300,000 is going to go towards compensation. Then the church council or the board, they will decide what the lead pastor's compensation would be. So let's say they decide that they're going to pay him $75,000 a year. That leaves $225,000 that the lead pastor then gets to decide how his staff is then compensated at that point. And I think this is important because now, as someone who's led churches before, I really love and honored our church council that I served under, and they decided those things for me. But it was obvious to me that they didn't know the intricacies of running a church staff day in and day out, and what those roles look like, or exactly how many hours, or how much education was required for certain areas. That was just outside of their realm of expertise. They were business leaders and great people in the community, but coming up with those individual salaries, that was something that was really challenging. And I think some people would say, well, you know, I don't know that we can trust our pastor to make those kinds of decisions with that without having a council around them. And I would say you might not have the right pastor if that's the case. If you can't trust them to kind of figure out how to lead a staff, that's kind of an important role in a pastor's life nowadays. So what do you have to add to that?
Yeah, what I would add too, and a reason why I think that this is a good thing to let the pastor, you know, determine is that he knows his leadership, or he or she should know their leadership, you know, and know, you know, they know what the youth pastor is doing. They're constantly doing the ministry work together. They know the worship pastor and the value and the work that they put in and day out. I mean, I hope they do. Like you said, the senior pastor should know that. And the senior pastor should have a bird's eye view. They're the spiritual leader of the church, and they know the hands-on work that's going on. They're on the front lines, so to speak. They know who's on the front lines. And so they have some discernment, hopefully, over people's gifts and abilities. So I think that that's also why they're a good candidate to definitely make that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the best way to do it. You know, it's not the only way. I do know some churches that have their board vote on every line item like that. I think it's just better when you have people that are involved in the day-to-day work of the church. They're usually the best ones to make some of those kinds of decisions there. So,
yeah, good. Well, I'll tackle the next one. So this one's to keep your total compensation budget in check. So we've been kind of covering this a little bit here and there, but I think, well, what did we see? That a staff budget should be normally the general rule is like 50% of the overall budget. So I think it's a good measurement and barometer to kind of keep things balanced, you know, and that helps you make the decision when you know, when you have a certain percentage and you keep to that, it makes the makes the challenge of the decision-making a little bit easier too, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that's the number is 50%. I've heard different things over the years, but 50% is kind of that, it's an artificial number, but it's kind of a cap that I think most churches should look at as to how much of their total budget goes towards staffing and compensation. And that includes benefits packages and all those kinds of things. What goes towards that? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a few reasons for that. I think for the most part, I think I rarely see churches really driving that number down, right? So usually it's kind of trying to keep it under 50% is the bigger challenge than pushing it up to 50% to get closer on that. And I think the reason for that is that it's always much easier to bring on staff than it is to let staff go. And, you know, it's just People are very reluctant to receive pay decreases, but they always are expecting and would like, and we'd like to give them pay increases. We believe that workers are worth their wages and we should be paying them well. Yeah. And so I think that it tends to be kind of a snowballing thing where that it's really hard to get staffing numbers and budget under control. But I think that that number should be right around 50% for most churches. Now, if you're a church that has a 100% paid off building and all you have is maintenance costs, you don't have a mortgage or rent or something like that that you have to pay, well, maybe some of that building expense could go towards staff. But the caution here is that if you get up to 65, 70, 75% of your budget going towards staffing, little blips in the economy, little changes, they could have a devastating effect of you having to immediately cut staff for that very reason there. So
right.
I think it's one of those things that it's just a good general rule of thumb. A lot of times churches are looking for kind of what's normal out there. I would target that 50% number.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Well, good. Why don't you tackle the last one?
Yeah, we'll do. Number seven is look to outsource whenever possible. Look to outsource work whenever possible. And I think this is something that is it's more of a possibility today than it's ever been before, especially in this kind of late COVID season, we pray. This is a late COVID season, not a mid-COVID, but we're in a late COVID season. Yeah. Everybody is kind of used to working from home, working remotely. We're all doing these things. And if we take a hard look at it, there are a lot of things that churches do or used to maybe think they had to hire staff for that they could probably outsource and get done at a fraction of the cost, right? So it's something that we've seen for years. I mean, I know you and I are in it. We do a lot of web development. That's kind of our core is web development projects. How often do we talk to churches that are medium to large size where they have a full-time web developer person on staff making $50,000, $60,000 a year for work that we could do for, you know, well under half of that cost, right? That we could do that same kind of work. And it's that's just one small example. I think that there's many, many areas. Maybe you can give some ideas on how churches can outsource things.
Yeah. Give some ideas there. But you also reminded me of kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. We actually worked with probably the largest church we worked with was a mega sized church with about like 15 different campuses. But one thing that was unique about them that I was impressed with was that they had a very small staff and they outsourced for most of their stuff. But they were still a very thriving, successful church, because I think the thought could be, well, if, you know, if we're outsourcing for everything, then, you know, internally we're not as healthy or you know, utilizing the gifts and talents of the people that we have. And we're all for that, right? You're supposed to, obviously, there's ways for people, you want to always find ways for people to use their giftings and serve at your church. But there was something to be said for the wisdom this church, how they operated it that way. Again, they were a smaller, more well-paid staff that were completely bought in. But they also really, you know, we were actually, you know, sometimes churches of that size, often they can't afford to like pay a designer on staff, and a lot of the churches that size do, but they looked at it as, hey, we can have someone do a great job and outsource for it and put our money into other ministry, you
Absolutely,
know, and so on. So
a church this size, this is a church of what, 15, 20,000 people on a typical Sunday between 15 different campuses.
Yeah.
And I mean, usually a church that size is having several technical people that are on staff doing a lot of this work. And that's not to say you won't need technical staff in this time. You will still need some of those kinds of people there, but they were able to have a much smaller technical staff and were able to outsource a lot of that work to us, and it saved them. I mean, I would say, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for sure, if not hundreds over the course of that project there. So
and this
that
was big. We work with all different size churches, and this applies to all different size churches. You know, there's benefits, I think, for, you know, if you're a small church under 50 people to this size church we're talking about. But some of the ideas, like you said, of things to outsource, I think could be anything from cleaning, we've seen traditionally a lot of the older, more traditional churches have a church groundkeeper, groundsman or keeper or custodians. And it's not to say that that's not a good staff position for your church. There's churches that have just exquisite buildings and properties that maybe they do need someone full time for, but if you don't have to have, that could be one. Web design, of course, and it's like you said earlier, and not paying someone $60,000 to $80,000 a year to just be your web designer, like you could get that done for a fraction of the cost out there. SEO, you know, that's become a big thing. Search engine marketing and your visibility and how you rank with Google. Churches now are more aware of how big of a deal that is with the amount of people searching. So there's a lot of great companies that out there that can help you accomplish that. And then of course, for even, you know, creative stuff, production stuff. So anything else you're thinking of?
I think creative work. I think there's lots of people that are out there to do, you know, sermon graphic design or event graphic design. A lot of the creative elements, those are things that are easily done remotely now, and someone that isn't necessarily a part of your church. I think a huge opportunity is bookkeeping. That's always been a big expense for churches and I know a lot of bookkeepers maybe that listen to this podcast and they're saying, oh no, don't say that. But I'm not sharing this one with my pastor. No way. But I think that, you know, there's lots that can be done virtually in those areas now. So bookkeeping, accounting, some of those kinds of things that churches traditionally had at least a part-time staff person doing some of that work that can be outsourced at a fraction of the cost. There really are so many ways nowadays that churches can do these kinds of things. So yeah, I think looking to outsource wherever possible, as long as it saves you money. And I think what it does a lot of times is it helps prevent you from having to have some of those those things we were talking about before, where you underpay someone because it needs to get done. Like, so churches do this famously with their custodians or their maintenance people, where it's almost like they, it's someone who is wanting to do it as an act of service. And that's great. We want to celebrate those kinds of things. But, you know, at some point, those things do tend to get into tough relationships. And we want to make sure we do our best to pay people well when we can. Again, small staff paid well over big staff paid poorly. That's really an important rule of thumb, I think. So anything to add as we kind of close out this conversation today, Ian?
No, I thought it was going to be boring. It ended up being fun.
Yeah, that's it. So that's who doesn't love talking about money, right?
That's right. So, that's right. So, but it's most mentioned topic in the Bible almost, right?
That's what they say. That's what I'm told.
So there you go. So absolutely. Anyway, good stuff. So well, that's good. No, nothing to add.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we've enjoyed having this conversation. If this has been beneficial to you, we would love it if you would rate, review, subscribe, wherever you get this podcast, whether you're watching or listening. That does mean the world to us. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.